Charting Toward Intimacy covers mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. We have a lot of questions when it comes to sex, and we are continuing our conversation with Dr. Sarah Bartel today and covering things like pornography, sex manuals, and sex therapy. Welcome to Charting Toward Intimacy, the Catholic sex and intimacy podcast for women. My name is Ellen Holloway, and I'm a Catholic speaker and coach who specializes in sex and marital intimacy, and I am on a mission to help you expand your understanding of the beauty of sexual intimacy and grow in holiness through the gift of your body. With us today, we have Dr. Sarah Bartel to continue the conversation from last week's episode. We're digging into some more specifics here on the things that are licit and illicit. But I really want to encourage you to go and listen to last week's episode if you haven't yet, because we lay some foundation for this conversation in that previous episode. This episode aired originally in 2022.
So let's jump in. We're going to start with pornography.
Yeah, like the elephant in the room. This is common and prevalent. It's everywhere, and it's affecting a lot of marriages, even in the Catholic world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't talk about this last time because we only had like a few minutes left at the end. And I was like, oh, we don't have enough time to give this justice.
Yes.
So let's quickly talk about the couple of different types of pornography. Cause I think, and we just mentioned it right before we started recording, that pornography is more than just the visual images of movies or clips or what am I trying to say? Magazines, still pictures and videos. That's what I was trying to say. Uh-huh. It's more than just that. Typically, that type of pornography is going to apply or appeal to men.
But not exclusively, of course.
Not exclusively.
There's a growing number of women who use and get addicted to this. And just to clarify, this is in the illicit category. Any type of pornography use, you know, whether it's addictive or, you know, someone feels like they can take it or leave it, it's sinful to use it and has no place in a Catholic marriage or any Catholic individual's life. Right. It's toxic stuff.
And I think it's really important to note that there is no place in a there is no excuse for it. Like there's no opportunity when it might be okay. Right. And that is because pornography in nature, especially pictorial or video pornography, it's degrading the image of that person who is portrayed in this. And it's basically saying this person has no dignity, so I can use this person for my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's absolutely not okay. We're never allowed to use another person for our pleasure only. And so even the argument of, well, we're using pornography to get an idea of like some better positions or something to spice up our life. No, because you are using the person in the pornographic image as a means for your pleasure. Yes, you may not be using it instead of your wife or instead of your husband or something like that, but you are still using that person, and that's never okay. We are always supposed to uphold the dignity of every human being, no matter who they are.
Beautifully stated. That's so well put. So there's the injustice against the act, you know, models, actors, actresses and whatnot. But there's also on the level of the spouse using it, or the person, the man or woman or child, sad to say, viewing pornography, that is a grave violation of the use of their own sexuality in terms of directing their gaze and along with it, their imagination outside of marriage for the source of that pleasure and stimulation. So your brain thinks that you are having sex with, you know, whoever you're viewing. I mean, that's just what happens when we look at the brain, how the pleasure centers light up and whatnot inside our brain. So it is a form of unchastity, even if you think, well, I'm not hurting anyone. First of all, that is very arguable. You know, there's a lot of harm that's happening in the sad lives of those who are creating the porn.
Right, right.
But yes, it is unchastity on the part of the user. So you're separating the unitive and procreative functions of sexuality by, you know, seeking stimulation and arousal and pleasure from looking at these images that are outside the context of your own specific wife, your own specific husband.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully, beautifully said. So then the other kind of category of porn that I think a lot of times is ignored in sexual culture, it said, oh, no, no, that's not porn, is like romance novels, mm-hmm. and particularly ones that are extremely graphic in their explanation of a sex scene. Obviously there's sex in a lot of books, but in certain books, it's just kind of like, it's quick. It's one sentence. It's not like this in-depth thing. What we're talking about is like the pages and pages of explanation of this sexual scene that mm-hmm. spurs the imagination into imagining this sexual scene and then basically creating that pornographic image in the mind. And this
of the reader,
right?
Imagination is creating image after reading the words. Yeah. And I'm not sure, like, I don't know, you know, if what like a strict definition of pornography is, but for all intents and purposes, morally, we're going to say, or I'm going to say, that is doing the same thing. It's seeking arousal outside of your own husband or wife and that relationship. And yeah, firing up your imagination with this external stimulation, in a sense, like external to your marriage.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, so those are also would be in that category of not licit. Those are things that we shouldn't be looking at or reading. There are so many good books. You guys, there's so many good books out there. You don't need to be reading those books.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So now kind of in that same, you know, going along that same thread, but in a slightly different category, let's talk about imaginative role play in
a marriage.
In a marriage. In marriage sex.
Yes. And I think it's important to remember that our imaginations, our minds, our brains are just, for especially for women, they can be our most sexual organ. You know, what you're thinking about, how you're training your thoughts, you know, before and during your lovemaking with your husband, it's going to have a huge impact on your experience and on how much you're enjoying it and how aroused you get. Because I think with our associative thinking that we do a lot of as women, it's easy for our minds to zip around, you know? So even as things are happening in the bedroom, you're thinking of your meal plan for the next day or, you know, oh, I need to turn in those forms to my kid's school or whatever. You know, there's just a lot that happens in our brains. And whereas husbands, men, they can park in one part of their brains and stay there. And they're, you know, they're not thinking about, oh, I need to change the oil or, you know, things like
I do not understand that concept. Like, I am just flabbergasted that men can just stay in one track. I don't understand because yes, I'm thinking about the to-do list. I'm thinking about the five things that I didn't get done that day.
Right.
And then sometimes that can then lead into now my brain has gone into a totally different space and suddenly my ability to orgasm is gone or my motivation is completely gone. And because I've thought through all of these different things. So now let's lead into where mm-hmm. does imaginative play fit and how can that help particularly women?
Yes. So it is totally legitimate to imagine a romantic or even erotic scene that features the main characters of you and your own husband, mm-hmm. right? And this can be really helpful, in fact, to keep your mind focused on the matter at hand, which is making love to your wonderful husband.
Exactly, right. So you're imagining a beautiful beach villa or, mm-hmm. you know, a romantic hotel room that doesn't have kids in the next bedroom over, right? Those kind of things can help us women like focus on the task at hand.
You know, sorry to put it that way.
Yeah, that sounded a little bit
utilitarian. Being more present and enjoying it. And what can be really beautiful, especially because we're so verbal and that can really root us in the moment, is if you can tell this story aloud, like take turns with your husband. You know, you can set it up like we're in a, you know, elegant luxury hotel in, you know, Italy or Paris or wherever. And I'm wearing, and you describe, you know, the elegant ball gown that you just came home from a concert in or whatever, you know, and then he can pick up with the next few, you know, moments of the scene and describe what happens then. And when you close the door to your hotel room, and then you pick up and, you know, take turns, and it keeps it fresh and exciting. It keeps you like, well, for a lot of us, our husband's voices are really rooting and grounding, something about those deeper male tones of voice. But it can be, yeah, much more interesting and exciting that way to, you know, imagine yourselves in the scene, and you're both in it together. You know, if your husband is telling this story with you, instead of it's just all happening inside your head quietly, then it's something you're both experiencing. There is a unity to it, and you're not doing anything to block the procreative, you know, function of your sexuality. So there's nothing immoral or illicit about this. This is totally good. And, you know, and as so long as in the story you're describing treating each other with respect and dignity, even while it's very erotic. So I got this from a Catholic French, actually she's Belgian sexologist, Thérèse Argot. French is a language I have. And so I've been able to follow her and read her content and hear her interviews. And yeah, she describes this as a way to really help couples, you know, experience more enjoyment in their sexuality.
Yeah, I love that. Now, there are ways that this can dip into the category of illicit, correct? So can we talk a little bit about those, maybe a couple examples of how it could dip into illicit, and so that we can kind of keep those things in mind if we want to, you know, bring this to our
power. Yeah. And this is just using our judgment and, you know, based on what we know about what sex should be in our church's teachings. It should be mutual self-giving. It should be respectful. So I think if you're going to start using really coarse terms for what's happening or for each other's body parts, I would say that would dip into the illicit category. There's always ways to highlight each other's masculinity and femininity as you're describing lovemaking and the parts that go with it that are honoring and respectful. So that's one caution I would give. And then again, like I think I alluded to earlier, if you're going to be imagining together acts that are degrading or like domination and control, that sort of thing, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Like we're not supposed to do that in real life with each other. And then, so even in your imagination, you shouldn't be thinking about like bondage or that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Kinky stuff like that.
Well, and I think too, it's just important to recognize, and I think we can all, you know, kind of get this from our own judgment, but imagining other people in the scene is not licit.
No.
This is between you and your husband or you and your wife. There is no place for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why I think it can be really helpful to be telling this story with each other, featuring you two. So to try to keep thoughts of other people at bay, like, you know, maybe earlier in the day you saw a news story or some entertainment media that you consumed featuring a really, you know, like attractive model or celebrity or whatnot. And you don't want them popping up in your mind that night. Right. So keeping your mind filled with these lovely details featuring you too can help crowd out, you know, those other intrusive thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I love that. Okay. So let's talk about next. We're going to go into the category of like sex therapy and sexologists. And I'll share some of my thoughts, and then Sarah, you can jump in a little bit. But here's the thing with sexologists is there is no Catholic training for sexologists. So the training for sexologists is secular in nature. That is the current training we have available. If somebody's out there and wants to create a Catholic morally licit training for sexologists, I will take it.
I would donate. That would be
sign me up. Oh my gosh. I would totally like invest in that. That would be such a gift. So if you're listening to this and you're like, maybe I want to do that, reach out. But so a sexologist, even if they are Christian or Catholic, they still have a lot of that secular training, which is going to influence the suggestions that they make for therapeutic purposes, and it's also going to influence just the way that they talk to you. So for example, a couple of phrases you might hear from a sexologist that on the surface level, it's like, oh, that seems fine, but is really not respecting the dignity of the sexual act, are things like a sexologist might say you need to do something prior to having penetrative sex. Well, here's the thing, guys. There's no such thing as any other type of sex. Penetrative sex is sex. That's
right.
It.
Right.
A sexologist might suggest some other, and I'm putting this in quotes, you can't see it, but like some other type of sex, which those are not licit. Penetrative sex is the only type of sex. Now, if there is something foreplay going on, manual stimulation, oral stimulation, foreplay, that is licit. And you can go back to the other episode and listen how we talk about some of those things. But as far as sex goes, there's only one type.
Right. Exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. And so that just hearing that can imply like, okay, there's, you know, I guess there's other kinds of sex that are not penetrative. No, those are masturbation or, you know, whether solo or together. And that's not licit in our.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Principles.
I think we talked about masturbation in the last episode, right?
I don't remember.
I can't remember either.
Anyway, it's bad. Don't do it alone or together.
Yeah.
Illicit.
Yeah. Masturbation, not okay. And I think we've talked about masturbation before, but yeah. And so they may, a lot of sexologists will suggest masturbation as a therapeutic means. And there are some very fine lines with therapy around the pelvic area and masturbation. And so that is an area you have to be very, very careful with. And so I think what I'm trying to say is that while there is nothing kind of objectively wrong with a sexologist and going to sex therapy, especially if you're dealing with something like vaginismus or vulvodynia and you have pain with intercourse, or you have maybe a dysfunction in an orgasm dysfunction or something like that, and you're seeking therapy for that, there's nothing objectively wrong with that, but you need to make sure that you are really aware of the things they're going to suggest to you and understanding that some of the things they suggest to you are not going to be licit, and that it's really important that you are definitely, you're understanding your Catholic values as far as sex goes, and that you are willing to say, no, I won't do that. What would be something else I could do?
Very good. That's very good. Yeah. You know, I think that is important to highlight, you know, that we have our guidelines about what's licit and illicit. When we're talking about therapy and what's therapeutic, it's important to remember the whole goal should be that fully unitive, which also is fully procreative act with our husband or wife. And sometimes there can be situations in which you're going to do something therapeutically on the way to that. And because of that goal, it is still okay. I'm just thinking of a case I'm working with right now with a wife inside one of our programs. And she has this crippling anxiety regarding intimacy. She was brought up in a super rigid, strict household. Even just thinking about making love was bringing this poor woman to the point of wanting to throw up and, you know, having stomach aches. So for her, and I checked this out with my guy, my mentor, Dr. John Grabowski at the Catholic University of America, who, you know, has decades of, you know, long established career as a Catholic moral theologian. But with her doing things with her husband, where there's going to be some touching and some, you know, gentle bit by bit, like getting used to touching and pleasure on the way to being able to come to that point where she can make love with him, you know, and it'll, and not be afraid of it and, you know, have her body clamp up, and that is okay as long as it's a step and a stage and a temporary part of getting to that goal. So,
right. Cause again, the ultimate goal is respecting the unitive function and respecting the procreative function of sex. So Yeah. So there are cases where things, and again, this is why I was kind of saying there's a very fine line between therapeutic touching of the pelvic area, right, for means of therapy and masturbation. There's a very fine line there. And there are situations where, you know, one thing or the other would be licit or illicit. But yeah, it's important to recognize for the vast majority of us, masturbation, absolutely off the table, right? Well, I mean, I think masturbation always, but it, some of the same touches and movements that would cause one person to masturbate might be pelvic therapy.
Right.
For someone else. I think that's actually the distinction I wanted to make.
Yeah. And it is, you know, when we look in Catholic moral theology at how to analyze a moral act, we look at object and circumstances, like our intention and goal, as well as what the, you know, the action is itself and the circumstances around it. So yeah, if this is part of therapy and the your goal too, you know, being able to have sex in a lovely way with your husband, that is different from masturbation where you're pleasuring yourself just for the sake of enjoying that pleasure. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So really with sex therapists, again, there's nothing objectively looking at it from the outside. There's nothing wrong with seeking therapy for sexuality, but it's important to recognize that there are very, very few people who call themselves sexologists who are in line with everything that the Catholic Church teaches. And it's not even in line with everything that the Catholic Church teaches. It's the fact that they are in line with respecting the full dignity of the human person. There are very few people who call themselves sexologists who also respect the full dignity of every human person and every sexual act. And so it's really important to be aware of that.
Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else you want to say about sex therapists?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. All right. So the last one we want to talk about, and this is great. Our timing is fabulous. We're almost out of time, but is sex manuals. And the reason why this transitions very well is that a sexologist may suggest a certain sex manual. And so I think the biggest thing here is that these manuals can be pornographic in nature. If they are a picture of two people that are not yourself,
yeah,
that is pornography.
Right. Yeah.
Do you want to take off?
Oh, I mean, I think it is really important to use discernment and good judgment in how these positions are going to be illustrated in the manual and what you're going to be looking at. Because, yeah, even maybe a really detailed sketch might be pornographic or just, you know, to just bring your imagination into other people's sex life instead of your own. So if you want some really like simple graphics that are going to be enough to communicate to you the position without being titillating or arousing, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, stick figures, very simple cartoons, because again, there is like cartoon pornography. And so, yeah, so it's important to recognize that distinction there. And there are also certain kinds of images or cartoons that might be those, even just a very simple stick figure, might be too much for someone who has a history of addiction to pornography. Even just seeing that image may bring back different, you know, images from their past and memories and things like that. So it's also just important to recognize, where are you at? Where is your spouse at? Mm-hmm. What has your history been? And what, you know, what's going to be okay for you guys to look at together. And of course, again, recognizing the fact that if it is, you can draw a hard line. If it is a picture of two people, you know, that's absolutely not
right. Like a photo,
a photo. Yeah. If it is like a photo of two people, that's out completely.
Very good point.
The other kind of category of like a sex manual is just descriptive in nature. And this is going to be a lot safer of an area to be in general. But again, recognize that there could be a place where this could dip into kind of that category where the romance novels sit. So if it's very objectively describing, you know, what the location of things and the position of bodies and things like that, like the book Holy Sex, I talk about this book all the time. I love this book. I think every Catholic couple should read this book together and read it multiple times, like read it once and like 5 years later, read it again. It is a great book. And further into the book, there is actually a section that does give descriptions of sexual positions. And funny, the thing I love about this book is that section, at the beginning of that section, it even says, if you skipped ahead to this section in the book, stop right now, go back
you're
to the
doing
beginning
it wrong. Of the whole thing. You didn't open just to here, did you?
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I love that because the whole first part of his book goes into explaining what holy sex is.
Spiritual and emotional connection. Yeah.
Exactly. Context. And so again, like, and this all goes back and we could get more nitty gritty, of course, but it is all about those two questions. Is this respecting the unitive function, both the physical unity and the emotional unity, mm-hmm. right? And is this respecting the procreative function? We are always called to respect those two things. That comes from Humana Vitae, is where Pope Paul VI kind of puts these two in a very clear light. Now, unity and procreation were absolutely kind of talked about before, but Pope Paul VI really he spelled it out so clear.
Yeah, they're intrinsically integrated. Yes. Like you can't harm one without harming the other, even if you're not intending to. So that's really important. I think that's good, especially for women who've had hysterectomies or whatnot, and they feel like, well, where's my procreative function anymore? You know, if you're being fully unitive, the procreative function, it's the kind of act that could be procreative if all the circumstances, you know, were in place with your bodies, you know, working there. You're not doing anything on purpose to impede it. That's
right. That would be the case for a woman who's pregnant or past menopause, right? We still absolutely have to respect the procreative function of, you know, what's going on with what's coming out of the man, right? We have to respect the procreative function of the sperm, even if there is no chance of pregnancy occurring again. We're getting into a whole nother topic.
Yeah, I know. Part three. Yeah. Ellen, I think if we have a minute or two left, it'd be nice to go talk about pornography again, because I think a lot of wives know it's wrong. Their husband's using it. They're frustrated and hurt. What can we recommend to them?
Yes, absolutely.
A really helpful website is sexhelp.com. That's where you can take a quiz to see, you know, how addicted your spouse or yourself might be to pornography. And it's connected with referrals to CSAT, so Certified Sexual Addiction Therapist. And if it's a case of porn addiction, that's the specific kind of help that the, you know, husband, if he's the porn addicted one, or yourself, if it's you, needs to get in order to get free. And also Sex Addicts Anonymous or Sex Anonymous SA. I don't remember the exact title. That can be really helpful support as well. But at any rate, I think it's sometimes wives feel like, oh, I can't tell him to stop, or I don't want to be checking up on if he's using it or not. And this affects your marriage. This affects you so much. I hear from wives who say, I feel so cheap, like the women in the pictures he's looking at or the videos he's using. You need to tell him that, and you just need to make it clear that this has to go. I just want to empower and encourage women to set a limit with their husbands. And even if that limit is you know, I'm not going to feel free to give myself to you in marriage and the marital act until I have assurance and certainty that you are, you know, you're getting clean from porn, or you're, you know, doing your very best, and you've got accountability set up. Maybe that accountability should not be the wife, but, you know, a friend or some sort of program or organization. But anyway, I just, even in marriages with strong Catholics, when this comes up, it can be very awkward and isolating for the wife to know who can she talk to about this? How can she talk to her husband about this? does she even get to? Like, maybe her job, maybe some women think that their job is just to be available to their husband sexually, whether, no matter what he is or is not doing on the side with pornography. And that, I just think, no, you know, your dignity demands that you tell him, no, that's not okay. I'm not okay having sex with you if, you know, you've been looking at these kinds of images.
Yeah, absolutely. Another resource too, you mentioned accountability. And there's a, this is the thing that Matt Frat always talks about, but Covenant Eyes is a, it's a monitoring software, right?
Yeah. Like filters, you put it, so you have to get it on anything your husband touches that has to do with the internet, his phone, his iPad, his computers. And even with all that, and it's a lot to set up and maintain. And, but yeah, then it will send reports to whoever the accountability person is. Again, I would say it would be so good if you know, the wife should also be informed if husband is slipping up.
Right.
But it'd be nice if she doesn't have to do also that work of being the main accountability person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there are some other resources. I'm going to put them in the show notes of just different programs and places for specifically for wives of husbands who are addicted to pornography.
Yeah, there's Bloom for Catholic Women is sort of like a supplemental, you know, group experience online. So you're connecting with other wives and getting inspiration and encouragement.
There are some great resources out there for that. And I really agree with what you're saying, Sarah, that it would be in an ideal situation, the wife would not also need to be that accountability partner. You know, it would be great if in this situation, maybe even that the husband finds another man.
That would be ideal. Yeah. But I think there should be an agreement between husband and wife. Like if he has a slip up that she needs to know, be told within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be so hard for the wife. But to know, like it is really hard to flip the switch from using porn, addicted to porn, to no more porn ever again. Like all of us with compulsive behaviors, like say I'm going to go off sugar. Oh my gosh, it's so hard for me.
That is impossible for me to do. Yeah.
Right.
Not impossible, but it's very hard.
So even as it's very frustrating and wounding for the wife to see that these slip ups can, you know, are happening, hopefully they're happening less and less. And anyway, that helps build trust and credibility again, to know what's really going on and not have it be all his secret life.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Well, I think that's a great place to end. Sarah, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. Maybe we'll have to do a part three.
It's a lot to say about this topic.
There is so much to say. It is such a big topic. And I know just when we posted the last episode, you and I both put things on our stories on Instagram and we got questions and that we hadn't covered in these episodes. And we're absolutely not going to be able to cover all of those questions. But definitely check out our stories, especially if you're listening to this episode in real time, or, you know, check out story highlights. We'll probably put those answers to some of those questions in story highlights too, because, you know, we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to continue having this conversation about things that are licit and illicit, because it can be hard. It can be hard to discern because our secular culture, my goodness, that was kind of a Freudian slip there. Our secular culture just does not understand this need to respect the dignity of the person. And so the unitive and the procreative meanings of the act have this huge rupture between the two of them.
And in the culture, they separate.
And as Catholics, we are called to bind them together, bring them back together, and make sure that they are intrinsically linked in every sexual act that we have. I don't know what the right verb was that I wanted there. And this is hard. This is so hard to live out because, you know, we've got all this info coming in from the secular culture that's just opposite of what we're trying to accomplish here. And I'm on a soapbox right now. I'm going to finish this soapbox here. But the thing is, marriage and the family is like the foundation of our faith. The Eucharist is the source and summit. Marriage and the family is down at the bottom. It's the foundation. And so obviously the evil one is going to want to attack that. That's why this is so hard.
Yeah, of course he wants to attack the image of God, which is man and woman, you know, totally given to one another. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Your marriage is an image of God. Man and woman totally, freely, faithfully, fruitfully giving themselves to each other. Did I get them all? Yeah. That is an image of the divine Trinitarian love. That is an image of God and his ultimate self-giving love, right? And so, of course, the devil's going to hate that. He's going to absolutely hate it.
And everything associated with it too, the life-giving quality, you know, the babies, the creativity that comes from that, the generosity. Yeah. Those are all things he hates. That's why he loves abortion. And
exactly. So it is going to be attacked. And I think it's really important. I think this is a great place to end. Is Pope Paul VI in Humana Vitae, he specifically said, guys, you can't live this out without the grace of God. This is not doable on your own.
Thanks so much for listening. If you are not already following us on Instagram, be sure to check us out at Charting Toward Intimacy. And if you listen to podcasts on a platform that gives you the option to rate or review, we'd love for you to do that because it helps us spread the word about the podcast. If you ever have questions, comments, or episode topic ideas, please reach out to us. We love to hear from you. You can reach out on Instagram or send us an email. Our email is in the show notes. Until next time.